Have you ever been stuck behind a big rig, a semi-truck on the freeway, and you get annoyed, like, ah, if I could just get around this guy? The worst is when both of them are next to each other, right? Get really annoyed by that. Well, watch out, because if one of them does something wrong and an extremely unlikely chain of events unfolds, probably won't, but if it did, you, your loved ones, everybody else within a half-mile radius could be vaporized in an instant or exposed to deadly amounts of radiation, because on our nation's highways, in a bunch of semi-trucks that look like any other semi-truck, flanked by vehicles that look like any other car on the road, are vehicles that are transporting dangerous nuclear cargo across the country, hidden in plain sight. And that is what we're going to talk about today here on the Council of Trent podcast. Welcome. I'm your host, Trent Horn. On Mondays and Wednesdays, we talk apologetics and theology, how to explain and defend the Catholic faith. But on Friday, we talk about whatever I want to talk about. And today, what I want to talk about is, how does the United States government transport nuclear materials around the country? And that's really something that the government has had to do for the past 70 years. And they've changed the ways that they've done that over time to deal with adapting circumstances, both within our own country and abroad when it comes to the use of nuclear weapons. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So let's jump right into it. Very first, when nuclear material and weapons were first transported around the country, so back in the 1950s, so you remember, of course, we have the 1940s, we're developing nuclear weapons, the atomic bomb, we have the Trinity test in New Mexico. Then Fat Man and Little Boy are used on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in World War II. And then suddenly the arms race begins. The Soviets also develop nuclear weapons as well. And we've got the arm race. And to keep up with the Soviets, the United States is trying to create more and more weapons, stronger missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles, to be able to match the Soviet threat. And so the Cold War has begun. And you have a facility, the Pantex plant in the Texas Panhandle, where a lot of these missiles and the warheads are being created. And then they have to be moved to missile silos all over the country. And how do you do that? Well, the first way they did that was they did it by train. Specifically, they used a special train called the White Train. Its full name is the United States Department of Energy Nuclear Weapons Transport Train, aka the White Train. And this was used from 1951 to 1987. The reason it is called the White Train is because it carries with it a series of boxcars. They're not boxcars. They're special cars designed to carry missiles or warheads or the nuclear material that is created at the Pantex plant all over the country. So you have these very distinctive white cars on the train. And the cars are then flanked by gray, usually they're gray boxcars that have machine gun turrets on the top of them to protect the train. And so that was the idea. And for a while, this worked without anything going awry, without the public even knowing about this. You had people that would just notice in certain towns, a white train would pull into the munitions plant, a train with all these white boxcars or white modified boxcars on them. And then it would leave and no one was the wiser. Until in the 1980s, you had the rise of the anti-nuclear movement, the nuclear resistance movement. A fair amount of Catholics were actually involved in these campaigns to oppose nuclear proliferation, to oppose the growth of America's nuclear arsenal in the wake of fears about nuclear war. And that's something that's understandable. You have in the 1980s, you had a lot of films. Probably the one that put the most fear into Americans was The Day After. I remember I rented, when I was at the Franciscan University of Steubenville, I rented that film from the library because I didn't have cable, I didn't have internet at the apartment I was staying at. So I just thought, okay, this might be something interesting to watch. And it's scary. It's what scared Ronald Reagan, actually, when it came to nuclear policy. So The Day After from 1983, there is another one that is equivalent to that. It is a British film. Oh, it's called Threads. And Threads, much like many things that come from the British take on things versus the American take, it's much more depressing and has more disturbing elements in it than what you have in The Day After. But both of them are really scary. So you have these protesters, And they were able to track the white trains where they were going because it's this big white train that's going around the country. And they would show up and try to block the train. There was actually a nun who almost got hit by one of the trains. So she was trying to block it to prevent it from transporting materials and weapons to a nuclear silo. And this was really contradicting the intent of the trains, which was to surreptitiously to secretly transport the material around the country without raising a fuss. So the nuclear weapons department, the Energy Office of Secure Transportation started to paint the trains a different color. Hopefully people wouldn't catch on, but it's still easy to spot the trains because they've got these big turrets on them with machine gunners in it. And so this is the danger because what if, for example, someone, the Soviets or a terrorist or somebody else who has designs on this material follows the protesters, uses them to locate the trains, attacks the train, steals the material, or just attacks it to create a nuclear disaster, to set off a bomb or a radiation leak or something like that. So that is where the Office of Secure Transportation eventually in 1987 discontinued the use of the white train to transport this material around. And also by the time you get to the late 80s and the early 90s, you have the United States beginning to sign non-proliferation treaties. You have some of the missiles that have been built back in the 50s or 60s. These test technologies getting older. The missiles are no longer usable because they're so old. So they had to be decommissioned. So now, instead of trying to take new nuclear missiles from Pantex in the Texas Panhandle, getting them to silos, they're trying to get the material from silos, from warehouses, from secure storage facilities, and transport them where they can be decommissioned, where the nuclear waste can be disposed of, you know, other things like that. And so the decision was made in 1987 to get rid of the white trains and to use armored trucks, semi-trucks, to be able to accomplish this. And that works because by the time, think about it, use trains in the 50s or 60s makes a lot of sense. One, you have big materials to carry, but two, the interstate highway system was still in its infancy. But when you get to the 80s and the 90s, now you have a completed interstate highway system, easy to transport this material. It's a lot more flexible in transportation than if you relied on railroads. It can be done much more secretive this way versus using a railroad. But there are also other hazards that don't arise with railroads. Now, using trains, you have derailments, but a lot of times there's a derailment. The tracks might be nowhere near a populated area. But on the interstate, there's usually other cars around. Interstates will go through highly populated areas. And sometimes trucks get into accidents. Like, what if the truck were to get in an accident and jackknife or tip over and the cargo spilled radioactive materials or a warhead, the worst case scenario, a warhead somehow detonated or something like that? So what do you do in these situations? So here are the safeguards. And this is out there. This could happen to you. You could be on the freeway. You see just a plain semi with government plates, with other cars around it with government plates, vans or SUVs. And right next to you, you're the closest you'll ever be to nuclear material, and you don't even know it. So how does the security on the trucks work? So first of all, the trucks are armored as can be. They have 12-inch thick steel doors, completely bulletproof. You can't cut your way through that. It would take a ridiculously long time to try to cut through the material to get inside of them. The trailers that are hauled by these semis, the modified trailers, are so well armored and insulated, they can be in a fire for 1 hour and nothing will affect the temperature of the contents inside of them. At least they're not going to rise to a dangerous temperature, but they can survive a fire for up to an hour. So as I said, you're not going to be able to get into them. Even if you could get into them, let's say you have a hijacker trying to steal the materials and wants to just cut the trailer open, get in. And of course, the trailer has more defense around it than just the truck and trailer. I'll get to that soon. Let's say they somehow get into the truck and want to get it. The truck can fill with a foam that will immobilize someone who is trying to get the materials. It can also send electric currents and shocks through the truck to stun and incapacitate anyone who's trying to steal the materials. The foam also works that if the truck were to be in an accident and tip over on its side, the foam would deploy to prevent the material, give it extra cushion in a high velocity incident or an accident. But the trucks are so heavy with their armor, it would take a ridiculous amount of force to upend them. odds are you probably wouldn't be able to do that. But if that did happen, the foam also acts as a cushion in order to do that. All right, well, plan B, let's say you're a hijacker. You want to steal the material. You'll cut into it later. You'll find a way to deactivate the defense systems. Maybe you're just going to get the driver, incapacitate him, cut the truck off, disassemble the trailer from the truck, put it on a new truck, put it on something else and just tow it away and deal with the security systems later. Well, the other countermeasure they have for that is that the truck carries under its axles explosive devices. So if necessary, those explosive devices will destroy the wheels and the axles on the truck. So if someone were to try to tow it away, you would just have this ridiculously heavy trailer that you're dragging on the freeway through gravel and dirt, and it's not going to go anywhere if it doesn't have usable wheels or an axle. So you have the ability to do that. Another interesting note about countermeasure explosives. In Switzerland, all the bridges are wired with explosives. If Switzerland had to hunker down in bunkers in the Alps, they could do that, and you wouldn't be able to get an army into Switzerland. They can detonate the bridges prevent invasion of Switzerland. That's how they would stay neutral for so long, deal with all this wars in Europe, figure, well, it might be good just to have this just in case. Remember that when the zombies show up. All right, so note, along with the defense systems in the truck and trailer itself, the fact is it's got about five unmarked armored SUVs flanking it at all times, with agents inside that have shotguns, they have assault weapons, and there's little holes inside the SUVs so they can stick out a gun barrel and they can fire on targets while staying inside of a bulletproof car. And so they're able to do that. One of the security vehicles is always ahead a few miles from the others. And this is important because all of the transportation of nuclear material, the Office of Secure Storage Transportation, I should say, OST, operates out of a facility in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And that tracks the trucks and the agents and coordinates their movements. So let's say, for example, you try to attack this with the agents and flanking around it. Even if you were to use an EMP to knock out their vehicles and knock out their communications so they can't call in for help, if you have another member of your team 2 miles ahead, along with scouting out the road if there are hazards, they can check back in. If they can't radio anybody on the team or the truck, they realize something has gone wrong, they can send a message to OST in Albuquerque to get help and to see, hey, this is a serious situation. We're going to need to have backup on this. The office in Albuquerque would then call in FBI or local law enforcement, probably local law enforcement first in the cities they're traveling through. And they would transmit a password to the local law enforcement that's going to show up to help the truck if it is in trouble. That way, the agents will be like, what's the password, to know that the law enforcement that show up are just not other terrorists or something to trick them to get out of their bulletproof vehicles and what they're doing. You got to think ahead, right? You got to think one step ahead of the bad guys if you're creating security and defense systems. So that is how the process works. And I just think that it's absolutely fascinating how this entire thing has been thought of. In the past 70 years, the program's been operating. No nuclear material has been lost or stolen because, as you can see, they take it very, very seriously. Just like I hope you take the Council of Trent very seriously. Thank you guys for listening. By the way, if you haven't had a chance yet, go and subscribe to us on YouTube. We have a lot more episodes there. We have full video content. I think you'll definitely enjoy that. But thank you guys, and I hope you have a very blessed weekend.